The next case this morning is number 06-2745, Ana Sanchez against the Attorney General. Ms. Baldini-Poterman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Maria Baldini-Poterman, and I represent Petitioner Ana Sanchez in this case. This case involves an analysis, or lack thereof, by the Board of Immigration Appeals of the Violence Against Women's Act and its special provisions that Congress intended to be available to battered immigrant women. On January 5, 2006, President Bush signed into law the Violence Against Women's Act of 2005, commonly known as VAWA 2005. This law provides the opportunity for immigrant women who have been abused by U.S. citizen spouses and their children who have been abused by U.S. citizen fathers to apply for relief under a special motion to reopen provision.
I'm looking at the board's decision on reopening, which is the one dated June 15, 2006, appended to your brief. And, you know, the opening paragraph is just an opening paragraph. The next paragraph looks at the 240AB1 general cancellation, and then you get over to page 2, and it addresses the special cancellation under VAWA, and the board decides that on this evidence, first that the immigration judge informed Ms. Sanchez about that option and that she elected not to pursue it. And so that, I think, is really what you need to confront. Here's this decision made, possibly because of concern about what the ex-spouse was going to say. Who knows? I don't know why she made the decision. I can imagine reasons that might not have been utterly frivolous reasons. But I think it's not quite fair to say the board wasn't paying attention to VAWA.
Yes, Your Honor, I'm glad you raised that. In the second page of the board's decision, specifically, if you look about, it says where second she asserts her formal counsel.
Right, that's where I am looking, yeah.
And then if you go down several lines, the board cites the regulation 103.2C1. That regulation applies to motions to reopen, which are subject to the 90-day limit on motions to reopen, and also requires that new evidence be provided that was not available at the prior hearing. So that the regulations themselves have never been amended to reflect the special motion to reopen provision that was instituted by Congress in the year of 2000 under VAWA 2000 itself.
But here I guess we have the intersection of two different rules, if you will. One of them would be the special reopening provisions of VAWA, which, you know, as you say, are not reflected at the moment in the text of one of the regulation. But the other is the board's decision that, in a sense, the VAWA issue was already in this case, and there was a conscious decision not to go that route. They say at the bottom of the same page we're both looking at, the respondent opted for a particular strategy and form of relief, and she is now bound by it unless she can show egregious conduct on counsel's part. So unless you think that VAWA also means you can kind of get two rounds of VAWA relief, why should we not say that she's bound by that earlier decision not to go that way?
Your Honor, I believe in order to answer that, I'd like to refer the court to two parts. First, in the amicus brief at pages 8 to 9, amicus discusses the intent of VAWA. On page 8, it identifies that Congress clarified that VAWA motions to reopen are not subject to numerical limits applicable to normal motions to reopen. And then we have the congressional testimony regarding the bill. And on page 9 in particular, John Connors states that one VAWA 2005 post-enactment motion to reopen may be filed by a VAWA applicant. Aliens who filed and were denied special VAWA motions to reopen under VAWA 2000 may file one new motion under this act, providing the opportunity that even those who had gone forward and had sought VAWA cancellation removal can still come back and file another motion to reopen under VAWA 2005. Secondly, if we look at the transcript reflects in the testimony, first of all, the first master calendar hearing, the attorney advised the immigration court, this is a VAWA cancellation case. He never mentions the word 10-year cancellation case. This is a VAWA cancellation case. The second master calendar, he reaffirms, this is a VAWA cancellation case. The immigration judge briefly, through a translator, advises Ms. Sanchez about her VAWA cancellation case. Then back in English to the attorney, he goes through the litany of evidence that the attorney should provide to the court to support the VAWA cancellation case. The attorney never files anything else in support of her application until the day of the hearing. So he filed the initial application with all the evidence of physical presence, showing she had been in the United States, evidence of the birth certificates, a copy of a permanent resident card, walks in the day of the hearing, and then tenders to the judge one letter from Shriners Hospital and one other document. Doesn't provide any of the tax returns, which Ms. Sanchez had said, I provided these. I asked my attorney several times, what else do I need to prepare my case? On the actual day of the hearing, there was no explanation given by the attorney for the withdrawal of the VAWA cancellation. Further, the immigration judge never questioned it. However, we know from the evidence submitted by the service itself, there was an investigation memo that the Department of Homeland Security provided to the judge, which shows that the ex-husband was the one who called the Immigration Service to report her. Looking at a timeline, I think this whole all needs to be put back into context. The ex-husband contested whether the child Valerie was actually his. Paternity testing demonstrated that the child was his. Those paternity results came back April 2nd of 2002. He called the Immigration Service April 22nd, 2002. Immigration went out and arrested her April 23rd, 2002, along with local law enforcement.
And he now wants custody, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. It's been a very long and protracted custody battle over the child. But up until the paternity results came back, he had no responsibilities. He wanted nothing to do with the child. And this was while they were still married, because the divorce did not take place until January 2003.
But their marriage, in terms of cohabiting, was pretty brief, wasn't it? Didn't the divorce get filed pretty quickly?
Yes, Your Honor. And if we, again, look back to why this marriage took place, she, in essence, has said she was date raped. And as a result of that, she became pregnant. So in the eyes of her family and her church, she desired to be married. And she finally accepted his offer. Again, looking back to some of the cycles, he had proposed to her in December 2000, and she rejected his offer at that point. That, if we look at the overall history of where immigration law was at that time, at that point, 245I, or what's known as Section 245I, was about to expire. So it would have been to her advantage to get married. But yet she rejected a proposal from him. She only married him after she suffered a date rape and became pregnant as a result of that. And she went forward and tried to make it work. There's other evidence of abuse that Ms. Sanchez, in her motion to reopen, provided the evidence. The domestic shelter Turning Point attempted to contact her attorney to talk to her. They faxed a letter. Again, there's other evidence regarding the divorce attorney attempting to work with Mr. Shelley in trying to put forward the case. Ultimately, what was the strategic decision made? Even in his response to the ARDC, which is contained in the admin record at 87 to 88, Mr. Shelley says, as you can see from the bulk of the paper submitted in her case, that we did a lot of work for her in an attempt to keep her here. He never once addresses why he withdrew the cancellation under VAWA. He doesn't address why he didn't file a self-petition for her when she was married to a U.S. citizen. There is no explanation given, and there was no explanation given in the record. And it's also kind of interesting that the immigration judge never once questioned her about did she understand that she was withdrawing her cancellation case. After the judge had heard at two prior hearings, this is a VAWA cancellation case, it would have behooved the judge to at least inquire of her, why are you giving up an easier form of relief? Respondent conceded in their brief that this was an easier form of cancellation to win. It was a lower standard of hardship. If we look at the 10-year standard, it's exceptional, extremely unusual hardship, and 10 years of good moral character, and then the favorable exercise of discretion along with the physical presence. VAWA cancellation is 3 years of physical presence, only extreme hardship, and you can show it to yourself, as well as 3 years of good moral character. The immigration judge found she had good moral character because he granted end of proceedings voluntary departure. If the immigration judge had not found in August of 2004 she had 5 years of good moral character, he could not have granted voluntary departure. So, Your Honor, at this point, we submit that the board erred as a matter of law in failing to grant her motion to reopen under VAWA 2005, as well as failed to recognize that he did render ineffective assistance of counsel. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Paulini. Order. Okay, now for Mr. Insignia.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Andrew Nsinga for the respondent, the Attorney General. Despite all arguments to the contrary, this is about a motion to reopen and a motion to reconsider, and whether the board abused its discretion in denying that.
I wonder if it's also, though, with respect to only the second part. I certainly understand the government's argument on the first part, the various limitations on reopening the general cancellation, so I don't think we need to focus on that. But in terms of the second part, I think it's in part about whether the correct legal standard was used in evaluating the VAWA motion to reopen. The board seems to be relying on this regulation, and the board seems to think that there is a numerical limit on that, which the statute does not impose. So there's not really a discretionary issue there. There's a legal issue.
Well, with regards to the VAWA cancellation claim, the issue is whether the board abused its discretion to find that there was not an effective assistance of counsel. With regards to the regulations, there's no evidence that Congress intended to disrupt the basic regulations over motions to reopen or to They obviously modified the statute in saying that the numerical limitations included the 90-day bar
requirement. And the number of petitions that you can have. So even if she withdrew because her former counsel was serving her poorly, why she couldn't file a one post-2005 motion to reopen is an interesting question. The board seems to think that because she opted for a particular strategy first time around, she has no legal entitlement to file a motion to reopen. That may not be correct.
I do not believe that is what the board is intending to say.
What do they mean when they say the respondent opted for a particular strategy and form of relief and she is now bound by it unless she can show egregious conduct on counsel's part?
Well, certainly it says you are, and there's nothing saying that you're not allowed to file a motion to reopen that decision.
And that's what she's trying to do, but they don't let her do it. They reject the motion to reopen.
They deny the motion to reopen. They do not say that you're not allowed to file one. They simply deny it, finding that there is not ineffective assistance of counsel.
But they seem to be making a number of mistakes in here, just evidentiary mistakes. They're looking back to the immigration judge's comments in the original hearing about the exercise of his discretion, in which he's making assumptions that she didn't file tax returns. The immigration judge never says a word about her second child, says only things about the first child with the scoliosis problem. Actually, he doesn't quite say that, but he's talking about the hospital with the first child. I mean, the board slides pretty quickly over the evidence that's presented.
Well, the issue presented to the board was not prima facie eligibility. The issue presented to the board was the ineffective assistance of counsel. And as they found, the decision by the prior attorney to not continue with the application was simply a strategic decision.
But how do they know that when there's not a single word in the record? How would you know, based on utter silence, whether somebody had a strategic reason or whether it was just neglect?
Well, as initially, part that I and petitioner and the amicus may disagree as to strategy. However, the Illinois Bar, the body who regulates attorneys, found that his behavior was not neglectful nor incompetent.
But they didn't make any statement about why he withdrew this claim. They just said he introduced a lot of stuff, but But it's hard to imagine that the weighing of the equities without any evidence on her side would necessarily be the same as the weighing of the equities with some evidence.
Well, she did not pursue the application for VAWA. Therefore, the immigration judge nor the board weighed the equities with regards to the actual discretionary determination.
Right.
I
don't know. I mean, I really am concerned that as I look at this paragraph in the motion to reopen, the board focuses on the standards for granting a motion to reopen. They cite 8 CFR section 1003.2C1, which does not incorporate the new VAWA criteria in it. And they go off on this strategic decision idea, which it seems to me might not be the right way to do it.
Well, I think there's two parts to that. First, that although VAWA said that the alien is not barred by the 90-day issue nor the numerical limitation of only one motion to reopen, that the regulations do not in any way go against the Congress's intent. Therefore, they are entitled to Chevron deference. Second, even if...
Well, we'll have to make that decision whether we think the regulation is consistent with the statute or not. If it's consistent, then there might be some deference. If it's not, though, we, of course, don't give any deference.
Well, second, even if the board erred in applying those regulations, it would be harmless error because the board found that there was not an effective assistance of counsel to give the board reason to reopen the proceedings. And to the extent Ms. Sanchez suggests somehow that the immigration judge should have asked further, it comes perilously close to suggesting that the immigration judge should attempt to violate attorney-client privilege, which certainly is not something desired by neither the government nor the aliens going before the immigration judge.
What should we do with the board's mistake of fact that she failed to file tax returns for a 10-year period?
Well, the evidence before them had been that she had not filed all of them. She did not file in her own name. She admitted in her testimony that she filed taxes under the name Maria Morato, which is the
people are allowed to pay their taxes even anonymously. As you know, the Internal Revenue Code has lots of different subdivisions, if you will. You know, there's a failure to pay, failure to file, failure to do this, failure to do that. I mean, she was not paying taxes for 10 years.
I'm not fully aware of the IRS regulations.
They slice things very finely over there.
However, the evidence still shows that she filed under a false identity. Mm-hmm. So that she, even though she has herself filed them, there was no record that she actually filed them in her name.
Except the board did have that record by the time they issued this decision. It was an understandable mistake for the immigration judge to make, except counsel had them apparently, so maybe it was an understandable mistake. By the time you get to this board decision, the board had them in front of it, and yet it states incorrectly that she didn't file.
Well, with regards to the immigration judge, of course, there's a lot of reasons perhaps that the attorney did not present them to the immigration judge, including the fact that it would emphasize the fact that she filed taxes under a false name, and it would emphasize her conviction for possession of a fraudulent identification.
Hard to imagine the marginal harm of that, though, because the judge already had all of that evidence in front of him. I mean, it's not like this would have been the revelation to the immigration judge that she had these other blots on her record.
Certainly, it might not have been a revelation, but it is a reasonable strategic decision to be made, and Ms. Sanchez cannot show as an abuse of discretion for the board to find that given all those errors with the VAWA claim, that the attorney would have chosen not to pursue it.
But, you know, the troublesome thing about this case, you know, maybe the board's decision has to be respected in the end, but the entire intent of Congress in passing VAWA was to make sure that illegal immigrants in this country couldn't be deprived of protection from the law, from the leverage of people, whether it's an employer, whether it's an abusive spouse, turning them in. And her abusive spouse is going to get his way in this case if she's sent back to Mexico. He abused her. He said, I have power over you. I'm going to turn you into the immigration authorities. He did, and the immigration authorities are playing right into his hands.
Well, if that is the case, the proper remedy is with the divorce court, with the criminal courts, not with the immigration court. The government is not bound to ignore the request of a citizen to investigate an issue merely because of allegations of abuse. And I would emphasize, again, they're allegations of abuse. Whether or not they are abuse under the law is something that the board must determine in the first instance, not this court.
Well, of course, the board's never reached that. So.
Because they were never before the board. As they found, it was not an effective assistance of counsel. And the issue before the court is whether that decision was an abuse of the board's discretion. And as they gave a rational explanation, did not depart from any policy, and nor did they rest on any impermissible basis. It was not an abuse of discretion for them to do so. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Your time had expired, but if you have a particular point you'd like to make, I will give you a minute for rebuttal.
Just two very, very brief points, Your Honor. The evidence that was submitted with the motion to reopen clearly has the potential to affect the outcome. Ms. Sanchez provided sufficient evidence of 9 years' worth of tax return payments or tax filings, as well as ties to her church since 1998, volunteer community work, et cetera, that goes to the 10-year cancellation standard. As far as the oil attorney's argument regarding that there are no regs regarding abuse, the regulations that were promulgated regarding VAWA claims is that any credible evidence may be considered. DHS provided no rebuttal evidence against any of the sworn affidavits, the police reports, or any of the other evidence regarding the abuse. Under the credible evidence standard, stalking of a U.S. citizen child as well as of a wife would be considered to fall under the category of domestic violence and extreme cruelty. Threatening a 14-year-old child to have her mother arrested, jailed, and deported also falls under that standard. The threats to Ms. Sanchez to have her arrested, jailed, and deported were carried through by Mr. Bozinski. We ask that this court find that the board erred as a matter of law under VAWA 2000 and VAWA 2005, find that she is statutorily eligible for VAWA cancellation, find that her attorney rendered ineffective assistance to counsel regarding her tenure claim, and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Indeed, our thanks to both attorneys in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.